So I'm kind of ready whenever you are. So.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to this mini extra episode of Can We Still Be Friends?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Ryan. I'm here with Nate.
I'm here. Yep. Ready to talk.
Yeah. And we wanted to drop a little episode to tell you what movie we're going to be doing in our next episode. We ended the Hamilton episode 95, right?
Right. We're getting close to the terrifyingly
mark.
Close to 100. Yeah.
Yeah. And we knew our guest was going to be Watson Jones, who is pastor at Compassion Baptist Church in Chicago, and somebody we went to college with.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what movie we were going to watch at the end of when we recorded the Hamilton episode. But now we do. So Nate, do you want to tell everybody what it is we're going to be watching for
right.
our next episode?
Yes, we get to have this special unveiling. We threw it out to Watson. Hey, what do you want to talk about on the podcast? And he got back to us. And the movie that Watson wants to discuss for our next episode is from 2010. It was a Best Picture winner at the Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. So those Oscar nuts of our listener base can maybe guess what it is before I even say it. But we're going to be discussing The King's Speech, which stars Colin Firth and Jeffrey Rush, directed by Tom Hooper. This is the movie about King George VI and his speech.
Yeah. Yep. Not to give too much away.
But, No. I don't want to give too much away. And, you know, having this be a Best Picture winner, I'm assuming maybe a lot of our listeners have watched it. But, you know, if they're anything like me, it's been since then, since 2010. So I haven't rewatched it.
I haven't seen it since then. It'll be interesting to go back and watch it. I feel like I might have a little bit more, I don't know, I was going to say clarity, but I guess maybe a little less noise about the movie watching it this time.
I know what you
because
mean.
Because I watched it kind of in the thick, which included, you know, ardent praise and reactionary backlash. So it'll be interesting to see it again. I guess I don't often do that with movies that I kind of watched as part of my Oscar run-up. And I'm really interested to hear what Watson has to say about it.
That's what I'm really excited about. Like, what is it about The King's Speech that really, you know, connected with him or made him think this is what I want to discuss with the two of us? So, you know, that's going to be a great conversation. Mm-hmm. I did check, though, and it is unfortunately not at the moment streaming anywhere easily available. So if you do want to watch it with us, and we hope you do, you're going to want to maybe, you know, check with your local library, try to get that thing on DVD or Blu-ray. But we do hope you watch it with us, and we hope you send in some of your comments or thoughts, and maybe, you know, even if you don't get a chance to watch it, you know, if you have any thoughts or memories of when you did watch King's Speech, send them our way and we'll try to get them in the episode. So the other part that we wanted to get into a little bit in this mini episode is a little bit of listener feedback. So we got this message, it was a little bit ago that we got it, but we didn't want to just kind of, it was a big question. In fact, there's a lot of questions in this email we got. So, and it was a big topic. So we actually thought it would be good to spend a little bit more time outside of an episode talking about it. Yeah. So, you know, why don't I go ahead and just read? This was a message that was sent to us from a listener. Her name's Paula. Here's how it reads. Hey guys, I recently happened upon your podcast and have really been enjoying it. I have been listening back through episodes from 2014. Now, side note, Ryan, can you believe we've been recording since that long?
No, I can't. That was shocking to me that we have opinions from back then that could have aged poorly you know, like they have age and significance to them.
Yeah. And boy, when we say in our episodes, dig through those archives, Paula really took us to task on that and dug through those archives. So anyways, back to Paula. So back through episodes from 2014 and just finished the Avengers episode. I was very curious to know if your perspectives had changed at all now being 7 years later and the Infinity Saga having ended. So that's one question.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple more questions thrown in here, so let's get into some of those. I know at one point in your episode, there was mention of the Avengers not hitting the same way if you didn't follow the comics, and also mention of already feeling fatigued with just the idea of 19 movies on the slate at that time in 2014. And I was very interested to know if you still viewed it the same way. So that's kind of question number two. How did you enjoy Infinity War and Endgame? There's another question in there. Do you still have similar feelings of fatigue? Did you, in fact, feel the fatigue through the years as you anticipated in 2014? I am not a follower of the comic books, and I have felt fully invested in the Marvel Cinematic Universe since Iron Man, and so the discussion you had, especially listening to it 7 years later, was very intriguing to me. If you actually discuss this at any point in later episodes, I apologize. I have not made it that far, but I didn't want to leave it hanging on, trying to see where you guys were at this point in the MCU. Thanks for your time, Paula. And what thanks I find interesting time, is thank you so much for that message. Lots of great questions in there. And, you know, I do find it really interesting that we really haven't revisited the Marvel Cinematic Universe at all, right. I don't think, since then. Or at least not had that conversation since then about what this has turned into.
Right.
Where do we want to start with this?
Well, a couple of places. I re-listened to that Avengers episode.
And I did too.
I think you did too. And one of the things that struck me is that we couldn't imagine the Marvel plan carrying out to fruition all the way up in 2019. Like, we couldn't believe that they had this plan up to 2019. Here it is 2021, and they've gone so far beyond that original plan. I kind of want to toss the questions to you, because have you seen any Marvel stuff other than Black Panther since Avengers, really? Like, do you keep up?
Yeah, so this is where I thought would be a good place to start, is just kind of the baseline. Let's answer for the listeners that you kind of have, right? You've kept up a lot. I really have not. I think the last Marvel movie I saw, other than Black Panther, and I got to say, Black Panther, I kind of saw more because it was such a kind of a juggernaut of a movie kind of by itself. But the only one I had seen kind of before that, and maybe even since, is Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, no, you know what? Later on, when a friend told me, Evan, who's actually been on the podcast quite a few times, he's a big fan of like the Captain America movies. So I watched the first Captain America movie maybe a few years ago when we first got Disney Plus, and then I tried watching the second one, and I got about halfway through. Other than that, no, I have not kept up on this. And I have to say, so you called me a grump in that episode. I don't know if you remember that. But my grumpiness really hasn't shifted that much. And if anything, it's gotten probably worse. But I think that maybe before we move on, it would be good for you to maybe answer, as someone who is a Marvel fan who has watched this, like, what did, going to her questions about those specific movies, like, what did you think about the Infinity Saga and, kind of where that all ended up?
Well, when we did our Avengers episode, the trailer for Age of Ultron had just come out. That's why one of the reasons we did it. And right. I did not like Age of Ultron very much. Like, I thought that was spinning its wheels a little bit. But I really did like Infinity War and Endgame. I thought they did a good job with it. I mean, are they a little bloated? Yes, they ended up getting so many characters in there, but I think that they did pretty well using all the characters. I think that they had done a little bit of that with Captain America, like Civil War. So it wasn't like all of a sudden we're seeing movie crossover sort of things. I thought Thanos was a really interesting villain. I thought the way that characters had to genuinely sacrifice was a really effective way to raise the stakes and add to the characters. I think we talked a lot about that in the Avengers episode, how Marvel focuses on character primarily. And I think that's what they did. I mean, not for everybody, but that's because they had like dozens of characters, but for a lot of characters like Vision and Wanda, they did a really, I think, a good job raising those stakes and drawing out a lot of the emotion. I thought, as far as multi-billion dollar movie series with so many hands and so many invested interests, they did pretty well. It doesn't hurt that they always have DC to point to as the person who's doing it wrong.
This is what you don't do. Look at how much better we're doing.
Right. I think that comparison is always helpful, but other, I think even without that, the Avengers movies stand on their own pretty well. And now I haven't seen every movie that comes out. I'm not a completionist in that sense. And I haven't loved every one that I saw. I really wanted to like Captain Marvel a lot more than I did. Mm-hmm. But even so, they were doing some interesting stuff with, you know, taking it back to the 90s. And I think Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck were the directors of that. And they had directed like Half Nelson and Sugar. Like these were that, like, I thought it was a really interesting choice to go with real indie directors, not action directors at all.
That has been kind of one of the through lines. I mean, you had like Taika Waititi did one of the Thor movies. I almost got me to see it.
Oh, which is incredible. It's so good.
And you have like Chloe Zhao is signed to do like, you know, I don't know which one. Okay, yeah. See, that's how little I know of this. I don't even know which movie she's assigned to. But
Well, the Russo brothers, they got their start, their big break where they directed a bunch of episodes of Community.
Yeah.
And then they got the Captain America, and then they ended up replacing Joss Whedon, like in the, not that Joss Whedon had the job, but they got the Avengers movies.
Sure. Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that Marvel's done a really good job with is letting directors do their own thing. Sometimes they didn't fully do it. Like Edgar Wright was writing and was in pre-production on Ant-Man, but they weren't willing to let him go all the way with his thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But,
I
think it's interesting.
Now, I want to say, I think to your credit in our episode, you really had some good foresight into where things were going.
It.
And that's crazy considering we didn't know. I mean, 7 years ago, the idea of streaming being where it would be now was we had no context for it. We had no way to think of that. But right. You already knew how they were going to be trying to kind of weave this into every single type of media possible. And who would have thought, you know, now with all the Marvel shows and Disney on Disney Plus, that it would go to the extent that you had kind of foreseen, you know? So,
yeah,
you know, I guess I'm going to let you do more of the talking here, I think, because it feels weird to do an episode about something that
you haven't seen,
that I know nothing about. I feel like I like to have a little bit of expertise in something we're talking about, but mm-hmm. this is part of my problem with the Marvel Cinematic Universe is that it's hard to even find an entry point, even if I wanted to get into it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess you could maybe speak a little bit more to that angle of where this went that we didn't know 7 years ago, as far as like all the streaming Disney Plus shows and the serial, like the movies themselves were a serialized thing, it seemed like.
Right.
Now they're actually on the medium of television, which we've known as being serialized, doing even more Marvel stuff.
Well, yeah, I gotta say, when I listened back to the episode, I was like, whoa, I didn't know I was gonna be, I nailed it so, so well.
You were a prophet, a Marvel prophet in your own right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, like the shows aren't super long, you know, like WandaVision is, oh gosh, is it 8 episodes? And I think Falcon and Winter Soldier is 6 episodes. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But if you put the episodes together, it's not that far off the runtime of like Endgame, which is, I think, like 2.5 hours long or something. Mm-hmm. So I think it might be kind of inviting the viewer like yourself to sort of be like, oh, well, I can watch 30 minutes, you know.
What I just remembered, though, is I did watch one Marvel show, and that was the Marvel's Jessica Jones show.
Oh.
With Kristen Ritter.
That's right.
And David Tennant.
Okay.
I did watch that. And the reason I watched it was because I felt like it was so kind of removed from mm-hmm. the Marvel thing, character-wise, that I could see it as a standalone thing.
Yeah. Well, that's...
And that was a Netflix show. That wasn't even a Disney show.
That's
Disney Plus,
interesting.
I should say.
Those shows really didn't fully connect. Like they maybe winked toward the broader Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
But the shows now are really linked to the Avengers movies. Like all of them happen after those movies. And I think that's sort of their safe bet is that, okay, maybe people aren't watching all of the individual superhero movies, but the numbers show most people have seen the Avengers movies. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we can get them to explore the other ones, especially. And I really think the shows are sort of like fishing. They're like casting bait, you know, like, do you like kooky sort of stuff. Like WandaVision really invited a lot of people who like weirder stuff. I mean, it's not super weird, but like every episode is from a decade of television until I think, unfortunately, the last two episodes are basically just like a another Marvel movie. I think they didn't really like commit to that. And Falcon and Winter Soldier is more like a buddy sort of type of movie, but also with like political intrigue and conspiracies and stuff. And then Loki, I think, is the best of the three Disney Plus series so far. Well, what if you count that one, but that one's really hit or miss. But Loki kind of combines some of like WandaVision's kookiness with like Terry Gilliam, Brazil satire and dystopia. It seems like they're just trying to get any type of viewer to find an in. And then once they've got you, there's going to be more of that.
Can I be honest though? And one of my criticisms of it is that's exactly why I'm almost obstinate about getting into it.
Because you can see through that, you're saying?
Well, I'm not trying to say I'm better than everyone. I can see better than everybody else. I'm just trying to say, I see it more as just big business at work.
And, sure.
And, you know, even when they're getting like an indie filmmaker, part of me is like, okay, so what algorithm are they looking at? What data points are they looking at to figure out we need to get this niche market? Let's get this director. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's still going to be a Marvel movie. It's still going to have to fit within this framework we've designed. The shows might have some more freedom as far as that goes, but especially with the movies, even when they got the directors I loved, there was still this sense of this movie is so expensive to make. We have to make our money back, not just domestically, but globally. So this all has to sort of be able to be sold internationally. And I think when you have that mindset, whether you're talking about Marvel or like Fast and the Furious, you know, it's going to inherently, I don't mean this in an insulting way, but I guess maybe dumb down like what you can really tackle, even thematically. Like we can only sort of tackle a sort of middle road theme-wise thing, just knowing that we have to make our money back because this stuff costs so much to make. So even
it'll shave off some edges. Definitely.
Yeah, that's, I guess, a better way to put it. And I guess where I come from, where I guess I get even more grumpy, is I have, you know, quite a few friends who are completely immersed in this universe. And because, like you're saying, the touch points are all there. They know I love Terry Gilliam. They know I love maybe Chloe Zhao. They know. So they, I feel like once a month I get this new thing that's like, hey, man, I know just you're not into, I know you're not into the Marvel universe and all that, but this one's the one, man. This is the one that's going to get you in. And I'm almost like, I don't want in. I really don't want in because attention is a commodity.
Right.
And I don't think Marvel deserves nearly as much attention as what a lot of people give it.
You don't want to give them that leash for them to tug on.
Kind of.
But you're not really, you don't really think you'll get way too into it, right? You just know it's not your thing.
And yes, and this is where I think,
and you know that they know it's not your thing, and so they're trying to get
exactly,
it to be your thing,
exactly.
And so you're not going to give them the satisfaction.
Well, and I think what I find both interesting in what Marvel's doing, but also like I'm just not sure if this is a terrible, terrible thing for our culture, is there are so many things that you are allowed to just not be into. Like I'm allowed to just not be into, you know, people who love Breaking Bad. You know, like if I love Breaking Bad, but there were people, you're allowed to not like Breaking Bad. And ultimately, at the end of the day, when it comes to the landscape of television, you can still be culturally relevant and talk about TV without having to have seen Breaking Bad.
I mean, it depends on the circle.
That's true. But, you know, I feel like with the Marvel universe, I can say I'm just not into it. But the longer I say that, the more I feel culturally irrelevant. You know, just if you follow movies, if you follow TV, the percentage of stuff that's just talking about Marvel has blown up to the point where you start thinking, like, how much of a film lover can I be and not watch any Marvel movies? It starts to whittle away what you other things that you could talk about within culture, you know.
Yeah, and then especially since it's part of the Disney Fox synergistic kind of maelstrom now. Like you can be a Simpsons fan, but then it's like, oh well, did you see the new Simpsons Marvel stuff? And it's like, no.
There's Simpsons Marvel stuff
and Simpsons Star Wars stuff. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I guess if I had to boil it down to a sentence, my feeling with Marvel is I don't want to put the time in, but I'm increasingly irrelevant if I don't.
Yeah.
You know?
And for me, I don't feel like it takes that much of my time. Like, I don't have to pore over every episode of Loki to enjoy it. I, you know, Falcon Winter Soldier, there were things I liked about it, but for the most part, it just wasn't my thing. I will say Falcon Winter Soldier had a lot of conversations about what it would mean for a Black person to be Captain America. And that's one of, like, the things that he wrestles with. You know, there are things that you find out, spoiler alert, I guess, that there was another super soldier and he was Black, but it was basically like a Tuskegee Institute sort of thing that happened to him, that he was like really mistreated as a super soldier. And then, because there's like an anti-government group that you spend a lot of time with, and you really kind of understand their perspective as they're marginalized people. They're people who were an event from Infinity War caused it. And you're hearing a lot of that sort of the voice of marginalized people. And granted, it's in a Marvel movie and it doesn't go especially deep, but there were things that now have entered pop culture consciousness that used to be on the fringes of race theory debates. And it's like, cool, like that they handed Falcon Winter Soldier to people who would explore those ideas. And Black Panther had a little bit, but granted, it's always going to be a Marvel movie, you know? So
right.
But like Killmonger as a character, it's like, man, it's not just a certain reading of that movie that would make people say Killmonger was right, though. The movie itself is saying Killmonger's got a point.
But let me ask you an honest question. And that is, let's say I did decide, okay, I've heard a lot of great things about Loki. I'm going to give it a shot. I'm not even asking if you think I would like it, but do you think someone like me is even going to be able to understand it close to the level that you do without having any of the context that you've put into this?
Certainly not without having seen all four Avengers movies.
Yeah, you know, so...
But it's a safe bet they're making. I mean, those movies, like, I don't know, they've made billions of dollars. Like, they know how many people have seen them. Like, they have a big enough audience.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing is I know that.
And I think maybe that's, they would, you watch Loki and you're like, oh, I don't really get this. And then you'd watch, and since you just had Disney Plus and they're right there, you just watch
right.
Infinity War and Endgame. But
I
do think Thor Ragnarok is just a great movie. Even if it wasn't Thor, if it was just, it could be any character and it would be an incredible movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've ever said, like, I know you don't like Marvel, but blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't think I've ever made that plea to you. But I do think if you're a Taika Waititi fan, Thor Ragnarok is just a good, it's an important movie to see for a Taika Waititi movie. Like, as a fan of his, to complete the cycle for his movies.
Well, maybe that'll be a good future episode for us, is I'll watch it. Indeed. And then we could revisit the Marvel Cinematic Universe even deeper, but kind of focus in on one movie that you, if you went into it with an open mind and you knew you liked the filmmaker, you could actually watch it as a standalone. And like
it's one of the ones that I feel like has its filmmaker's stamp on it more than just like giving them some interesting stuff to do. But it is a lot. And when we were talking about fatigue, we were maybe underestimating how much stuff would be coming out and how tiring it would be.
What's funny is that today I ran across a very similar tweet to what we were referencing in that episode, where we were kind of referencing someone who had written out all the movies that were just going to be coming out that next year. Or no, through 2019, right?
Right.
So today I ran across on Twitter someone who just tweeted out just the movies coming out in 2022. I mean, I wonder if I should just read this out to you.
Okay.
Just to see how, let this wash over you and see how you feel. The Batman, Doctor Strange 2, Halloween Ends, Scream 5, Black Adam, Jurassic World Dominion, The Marvels, The Flash, Aquaman 2, John Wick 4, Black Panther 2, Thor 4, Into the Spider-Verse 2, Bullet Train, Sonic 2, Mission Impossible 7, Babylon, Indiana Jones 5.
Oh my gosh.
That's 1 year. That's 2022.
Sequels and reboots.
And franchise movies. I mean, I'm glad that this podcast, we don't actually have to be real film critics.
Right.
And watch like kind of everything that comes out. Because that does sound exhausting.
It does.
That sounds like so much CGI, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. That's crazy.
I mean, if you're a super fan of this stuff, it's got to be just great.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I'd hate to begrudge anybody that.
Yeah. But if you're not, it's terribly overwhelming.
But anyways, I hope that, I don't know if that answers all of Paula's questions.
Yeah, I don't know.
But we tried. We got close, yeah, we did. I think.
We talked for a while, so hopefully something got answered there.
Yeah.
But it was a cool exercise to kind of re-listen to an old episode with the idea of criticizing our ideas or like seeing, you know, oh, do I still think that? Or
yeah.
Did that bear out? I think for the most part it did. Like
I think
what we said back then. I got to say our tone was like unnecessarily combative.
That was our thing. That was our thing at the beginning.
It was. We did such, like, we forced it.
Well, think about it. In this little mini episode, this is probably the closest thing we have had in a while to our original episodes where we're kind of coming into this knowing we're coming from different places.
Yeah,
and,
but even
and think about how different tonight's conversation was compared to, like, what our early episodes were, where we just, it was all about combat.
The contrast. Yeah. I hope Paula still likes our show when she gets past... when she gets past that dynamic.
anyways, Paula, thank you once again for sending that in. We really appreciate it. And at any time, anybody who's listening can send us feedback. We can run down those really quickly if anybody hasn't heard them already. But you can email us anytime, feedback@canwestillbefriends.net. We're on Facebook, Can We Still Be Friends Podcast. We're on Instagram, Can We Still Be Friends Pod. You can always visit our website, canwestillbefriends.net, and there you can send us a message as well. Leave a comment, dig through those archives. And we also have a phone number if anybody wants to leave us a voice message. 847-306-9532 is the number to call. Did you want to wrap up at all with anything you've been watching lately?
Oh, what have I been watching lately? Well, White Lotus, I think we both watched that.
Yeah. Did you finish it?
Yeah, we finished it.
Okay.
That was quite a trip. I would recommend it with some caveats. It's very dark.
Yes.
But Mike White, we've always been fans of his stuff.
Both of us have. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess I haven't watched it in a while, but Enlightened, a show that he did before White Lotus. That's a great one.
Yeah, but White Lotus is great. I love the music in that a lot. I just love,
The so most much anxiety-inducing music since Punch Drunk Love, I think, for me.
Yeah, oh man, that's a good example. Yeah, anything else?
Yeah, I feel like, Summer of Soul, the documentary by Questlove, was really great. Really got me into 70s music, 70s black music that I either hadn't heard in a while or hadn't heard at all.
I'll plug real quick, since you just said that last week, if you listen to Fresh Air with Terry Gross, she was a huge fan of Summer of Soul. There's a great Questlove interview with her, but all last week they went through Fresh Air's archives and found interviews she had done with any of the musicians that played in that in the festival. I know B.B. King was in there. I don't know. You'll have to look it up yourself, but
it was a pretty spiritual experience. I'd say watching that movie, especially back to back watching it with the Woodstock documentary and seeing
what a contrast.
Like, yeah,
one's a horror movie and the other one's just this huge celebration.
Celebration of excellence. What about you?
So I watched White Lotus as well. I also recently caught up with a blind spot of mine and watched Minority Report, the Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. It's definitely a 2000 movie.
Like, yeah.
It came out in 2000.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
It was like prescient on some things, and on other things, it was just sort of like really cheesy sci-fi kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The reason I decided to watch it though was because I had watched a documentary that came out this year called Coded Bias. As far as the documentaries go, I wouldn't say it's like necessarily an artistic movie of a documentary. Like, I think it's just kind of a PBS documentary.
Okay.
But it follows around the MIT computer scientist. I'm going to butcher her name. Joy Buolamwini, I think is how you say it.
Okay.
But she was the MIT researcher who really uncovered the racial bias in Amazon's facial recognition software.
Oh.
And also found bias in a lot of algorithmically driven software. And the documentary kind of follows her around with a couple other scientists and tech researchers, and talks a lot about just where we are at with technology and specifically algorithms, and what can go horribly wrong and already has gone horribly wrong with algorithms, and have actually deeply impacted real people's lives.
And yet
we still let this algorithm kind of drive everything. So I'm watching this, and it's really good. I do recommend it, just from an informative standpoint, just to kind of learn stuff. And they dropped in a lot of clips from Minority Report. Because Minority Report, it really nailed the targeted marketing. How when Tom Cruise's character walks into a Gap, it knows him by name, knows his purchase history, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what made me want to watch Minority Report.
That's cool.
But yeah, I think that's about it for me.
Well, it's been nice catching up. I look forward to watching King's Speech.
Yeah.
If anybody has any other questions for us, that we can do a mini episode about, keep them coming. But other than that, I think
we hope you're well, and I guess we'll see you next time.
Yeah.